I'm Michael Edward Miller. You're listening to WTC. Now we're going to hear about the Muse of Fire project. Since 2011, this project has been giving children between ages 10 and 12 years old an opportunity to write their own play. For 10 weeks, they work with a group of teachers and actors who help them figure out what they want to say and how to say it. And then at the end of the session, a group of adult actors perform the plays in the Macaulay School Theater. Everyone's invited. WTC's Richard Winham is speaking with the Muse of Fire's artistic director, Stevie Ray Dallimore, plus several others in what they call Team Muse. They're talking about the writers and their plays. They're going to have their inaugural performance this Friday evening at Macaulay at 7 p.m.
Eight budding young playwrights were in the program this spring. One was Mikey Monahan. He's a student at the Our Lady of Perpetual Help School. He's 12 years old. His play is called The Grand Adventure, a comedy.
Characters: Billy, a fish who is a traveling vacuum salesman. He lives at a reef and he hates sharks.
This is Evie Durant. At various points, an actor, a director, and perhaps most importantly, she makes all the props.
Bob, Billy's son, lives at a reef. He's the assistant traveling vacuum salesman. And Flounder, a cannibal fish with split personalities. Flounder 1 is nice and upbeat. Flounder 2 is mean, creepy, and evil. Vacuums are his weakness. Scene 1. Time 30 minutes after dropped out of a boat. Place the open ocean. At rise, Billy and Bob are recovering from hitting a boat. Billy shakes Bob.
Bob, wake up.
What happened?
Well, you and I were swimming at the surface by the reef selling vacuum cleaners, and we were scooped up by a pelican. If we were not knocked out, I could have gotten us out.
Why are we not dead?
Well, the bird didn't swallow us. Fortunately, I brought an extra vacuum cleaner, and I shoved it down his throat when I woke up.
What happened next?
Well, the bird started coughing, and then he spit us out, and then poof, we hit a boat. We bounced off and fell in. You were still unconscious when we fell. I remember, like, this vacuum cleaner. It was being coughed up by the bird, and then it hit me, and I fell unconscious.
Wow. That's a weird story.
Yeah, tell me about it. Working with children, the coolest thing, and the thing that it helps the most with for me, is being around young children all day long. It's easier for me, I think, to enter into that world and to think like they do and take their words seriously, take the things that they have to say seriously.
This is Michael Lake. As well as playing a role in many of the plays, he's chairman of the Performing Arts Department at Macaulay. I wonder what it's like to be in that world all day long.
It's like keeping cats in a basket. It's fast-paced and high energy.
But it's
a lot of fun. I love it. Wouldn't do anything else.
Muse of Fire offers 3 10-week sessions every year in the fall, in the spring, and through the summer. All children between 10 and 12 across the city are welcome to join. They're not looking for great writers, just great imaginations. I imagine at this point you have quite a reputation among that age group. Are they familiar with what you do? When you approach them, they're familiar with the whole concept?
Well, I mean, we get kids from all over, so...
I guess what I'm asking is, do you have a rep?
I would say so.
I would think so.
In a community, for sure.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Not just with kids, but with parents as well, who are fascinated by this work and a program.
This is Lizzie Chasen. She's a freelance theatre teacher. She also teaches with Muse. She's an actor with Muse, and she also makes the costumes.
And it influences these kids' lives, and you can see how they just take off from there, and the fact that they're writing at such a young age, and they want their kids' work up on stage as well. So I hear it all the time. You work with Muse, how exciting. It's a program that works, and that feels good to stand behind, and I think that the community completely sees that, so it's exciting to be part of, for sure.
But when these little fledglings leave the nest, do you see them again or hear from them again?
I work with the Oak Street Playhouse. I direct a show for them each season, and the First Centenary United Methodist that hosts the Oak Street Playhouse, they also have the Inner City Ministries, which is an after-school program, which we get several kids from for each season. And I'll see kids that have been in the program, and they're just like, oh, Miss Heavy, and they just like... will swamp me. I'm like, whoa, hi, it's good to see you.
A lot of kids come back to the shows, too. Mm-hmm. They want to see the next stage of work that's happening.
And Mike and I work at Macaulay.
This is Stevie Ray Dallimore, the artistic director for Muse of Fire. He's appeared on and off Broadway, as well as in film and on television. The idea for Muse of Fire originated with the 52nd Street project in New York City. He worked on that project, which paired young playwrights with Broadway actors, like himself.
So there have actually been musers who've gone on to become students at Macaulay, so we'll see them as well. It's always kind of cool when, you know, a kid is, we've met them first as a muser, and then they become a Macaulay student. I mean, we take all kinds of kids, and all comers are welcome. But often, one of the more successful elements of the program is actually when we get a shy kid who needs a way to express and, you know, allow his or her freak flag to fly. Mm-hmm. And, but I mean, in a way that's like, we don't judge it. We let them write what's going on with them. They come up, obviously, with some pretty crazy things, and that's kind of the beauty of it. And it really is interesting to watch the kids who sometimes really don't seem to have a real specific outlet, that this seems to be something that really works for them, you know, really well.
Or a safe space to feel comfortable, I think, to share their ideas. The classes really provide that space for these kids where maybe in their schools they are bullied for being smart, possibly, you know?
Really? Yeah.
I found
we witnessed that. We went into the schools last semester to do some staged readings for the kids that were there. And that was pretty apparent when we went to Calvin Donaldson, that the kids that we had two kids from Calvin Donaldson, and they were struggling.
And I think they were nervous for their work to be read in front of their peers as well.
But that this program really helped them.
And it was interesting, actually, to watch the peers listen to their work, because at first the student was nervous to share his work, and then all of a sudden, having all of us up there reading, elevating the work, having it be so important, you could see that everybody was jealous. They wanted to be a part of this as well. And
oh, that's really cool.
It was very cool. I think that's why it's so important for us to take the work back into the schools. It's a good way for us to kind of spider this out, tell people about this program, show people what these kids are creating.
It strikes me that maybe you've reframed their rep too, right, as kids.
Yeah, well, we hope
they're
so.
They're not brainy nerds anymore. Hey, they've got something going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is really
valid,
cool if you can do that, you know.
Very cool.
That might stop some of that bullying, you know.
I want to add one more thing, too. I mean, the thing that's kind of cool is we've mentioned that a lot of our kids are brainy and nerdy. We love that. Mm. But at the same time, there's another kid out there we often get who isn't necessarily known to be particularly brainy or nerdy.
Right.
And in a way, that is also interesting because a unique voice comes out there, too. It's not this, like, uber intelligent, I'm so smart I can write voice. It's something that's kind of untapped, I guess you could say. And that's really cool as well. You know what I mean? So this program really isn't necessarily for just like the brainy, nerdy kids, the smart kids.
We've worked with kids who don't even like to write at all, actually. And the whole, it's almost like this big fear. Oh, I'm not going to write a play. I mean, this is crazy. And then talking about, well, what are your interests, and pulling all of that up to the surface, showing them how accessible this work is, it makes it seem kind of exciting. Especially, I think, then all of a sudden when they're going back into the schools and, oh, I have to write a creative story, well, it doesn't seem so hard.
Another of the young playwrights is Braden E. Tate. Braden is in the sixth grade in the Charter School of Excellence.
Braden is a very passionate kid. He would get really excited about all of the games that we played, especially like when we would play the beep bop game. Like, he would get very upset if it didn't get passed fast enough. Like, he'd be like, come on, come on! He was very passionate about it. This whole group, they were very talkative and very helpful with each other and fed off of each other's energies and gave good criticism and asked a lot of questions. So it was really interesting to watch. Some of the groups are a little more timid with asking questions about characters, but this particular class was really good about being like, well, why is that character doing this thing? Or what do they look like? Or, you know, just things that you would want to know as an audience. I think it helped each of the playwrights to talk to all their classmates. But Braden was especially passionate about what he was writing and his characters. And I think his play is a little different from the other ones.
I think so too.
And it's really fun. It's not quite as silly as some of the other ones.
Not at all. Yeah. I mean, it is silly.
They all have an element of silliness to them, but this one's not as like slapsticky silly as some of the others.
Water, Elk, and Bears, Oh My, by Braden E. Tate. Characters: Bambo, 17, 12 years old. Elk that is terrified of bears and has no regard for the golden rule, none at all. Mizaqua, water that has always been there with God for parents and very passive and wise, but cares more for himself than anything else, so does his parents. Watura, the water god, Mizaqua's father, and will protect water and empower at all costs. Aniko, the animal god, who will protect animals but cares for other people. And Kluki, a bear that is very kind, brown, like other bears, who loves rain. He always has a mother. Scene 1, time, 11 a.m., setting, light blue water with fish and crabs. It's very sunny. At rise, fish swimming and basic ocean actions with Mizaqua in the center, forests on left and dark clouds on his right.
This is my favorite spot in the entire world. It is so serene. The forest on the right and No. My fear of rain is not ruining my peaceful spot.
The clouds move over to the forest, and it begins to rain in the forest. Dramatically.
Oh, the falling! It's so high up! Why does rain have to exist? Ugh, it's not to flood the earth or anything. It's just here to exist and torment me.
Determined.
I will rid this rain forever.
Scene 2, time, 11:30. Place, outer space, no planets, just distant stars. Watura and Aniko standing to the left of the holographic spinning globe facing it. Mizaqua literally pops into the space to the right of the globe. Shocked.
Mizaqua, why are you here?
Aniko crosses his arms angrily.
I want you to completely stop all the rain in this spot.
He then, without looking, stops the globe with one finger and leaves for a second.
All right. Deal.
Watura and Mizaqua attempt to shake hands, but are cut short by Aniko.
What? A mass drought? That's a mass execution.
For who?
The bears. They live in the forest there. Do you know what happens to places without rain?
It becomes a
desert.
All right. You're not the plant god. The bears live. You're happy. I'm happy.
Live on what?
The nearby ocean, of course.
That's funny. It's so funny that the so-called god of water doesn't realize that the ocean is made out of salt water.
Back off, Aniko, or so help me, I'll drown every bear in that forest.
You wouldn't.
Try me!
And then I wish that we actually had the interviews after they get to see their show, see it performed, because their take on what they wrote, they can't even believe that that's what they wrote, because it takes this whole new life and form. So and then they get to stand behind it. Yeah, I wrote that, which is super exciting. Sometimes I just wish that we had the kids in here talking about after they see their show, because that's part two. That's part two of Muse. It's a whole other big part of this program.
I can only imagine the impact at that age.
Oh, and it's incredible.
To be taken seriously, and people actually listening to you.
There's three performances. So the first performance, a lot of them are just sitting at the desk sort of hunched down. And
nervous.
Like, I'm embarrassed that people are here and that I wrote this. And by the third one, they're like, check me out. I wrote this play.
Yeah, excited to see it again.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It's one of the best parts about this whole program. Absolutely. Is the...
The plays written by the 8 Muse of Fire playwrights will be in the theatre at Macaulay School for 3 performances, this Friday, May 25th, and on Saturday, May 26th. Details are on the Muse of Fire Facebook page. For WUTC's Around and About Chattanooga, I'm Richard Winham.